Oh, welcome back. It's been almost 3 years since state law created the Massachusetts Office of the Veteran Advocate, and it's been almost a year since Colonel Bob Notch has been here to tell us what that is. So he's back. Colonel, good to see you.
Great to see you, Joe.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, pleasure. As I mentioned, this November, actually, right, will be 3 years.
For me, for me, getting appointed to the position, it'll be 3 years in November.
Okay.
And at the time, it was only me.
Right.
And so it was the process of building an agency from scratch.
Wow.
From one person to now we have our own independent office in Braintree. Over the last couple of years, we've determined about 12 full-time personnel to create the staff to do the basic, the minimum work that we need to do. I think there's room once we really get into a heavier caseload, increased capacity, there might be an opportunity to grow.
Okay.
But we're fitting within our means right now, and 12 is about the right number to cover everything that we've been required to do.
Across the state, right? Statewide.
Yeah. Statewide, I'll talk about it briefly. We've divided up into 7 divisions. A couple of those are administrative, legal, communications, but then we get to the primary work for the office. Policy and Research Division. We've got a Veteran Safety and Investigations Division. We have a liaison division. In that one in particular, we have 4 liaisons that we've placed to cover the 4 different regions of the Commonwealth.
Okay.
So Western, Central, Northeast, and Southeast. And they're primarily focused on supporting the municipal veteran service officers
sure.
that are in our cities and towns. And that lines up with how their association has broken out the state as well.
Yeah.
And then the last division that we created just in 2026 is data and information. And what we found is that is a critical missing piece as far as where is the information about veterans within the Commonwealth? How is it managed? Who has it? And can we consolidate that information to provide a better picture of what the needs are? Number one, where are our veterans living, and then what are their particular needs? So
okay.
we see a lot of room for growth in the data side.
Yeah. So how is your office, Bob, different from the state Veterans Affairs office?
We do get that question quite a bit, and what I like to say is maybe that's not the right question.
Okay.
I think the right question is how do we complement what is happening in the state as far as the veterans and their families concerned?
Okay.
Because the statute we have has us reaching across all state executive offices. And we've done the analysis out of the 11 executive offices. There's 10 of them that have some type of program, benefit, or service for veterans. So we work across all of them to look at what are the different capacities that we have, ways to improve things for veterans and their families.
Okay.
And then that doesn't even necessarily include Veterans Bonus Division, which falls under the Treasurer and not under an executive office,
sure.
or veterans in the justice system, which is separate as well. So we take a look at all of it, and our goal is to, how is it working? Is it doing what we expect it to do? Are we analyzing it to see if it's producing the results we want?
Yep.
And then can we improve it? A lot of the laws that we have for our veterans are pretty ancient, and so the world changes, and so we want to make sure, are we keeping up with the changes in the world and doing the best we can for our
okay.
veterans?
Can we talk about some success stories, some achievements you've accomplished so far?
Yeah, so 2026, we just closed out fiscal year 2026 in
right.
June.
Right.
And what I call that is our first real year of operations. The 2025 and 2024 was just building the office and doing what we could.
Sure, from scratch.
Right.
First in the nation, actually, right?
First in the nation, yeah, that's a great point. Now I want to highlight that. Our legislature created this office coming out of the tragedies at the veterans' homes during COVID.
Sure.
And this was one of the many solutions they put in place, and it's very unique, right? It's the first in the nation,
mm-hmm.
although in December, New Jersey created, they passed a law to create an Office of the Veteran Advocate.
Okay.
They have not filled it yet,
okay.
so it's still vacant.
Right.
So we still remain the first in the nation. Yeah, and the goal is to how can we collaboratively work, provide that oversight. I call it collaborative oversight
yeah.
is how we approach working with other agencies. And that's to go in and say, let's look at the problem together, let's find solutions together, and when we put those solutions in place. Let's let everybody know how it works, what we fixed. And that's our goal, okay. Working with other agencies.
And really, it's an independent organization, right? It's an independent agency.
We are independent, yeah. And that's critical for people to understand. So yeah. That means that we do not have any supervision or control by any executive agency.
Right.
That means we have the opportunity to take a look at things based on the decisions of me and the staff in
that's
the
right.
office. Do
yeah.
we have the capacity? Does it fall within our authority? And can we make a difference with this?
Can you advocate, right? It's right in your name. Can you advocate for the veteran?
You got it.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. What have you advocated for so far?
So, yeah. Back to your question, I think, on successes. A couple things that were significant this year. We took a look at the municipal veteran service officers. How are they working in Massachusetts? Those have been around since, I think, at least Civil War time
Is that right?
frame.
Well.
And there have been updates over the years. We have 351 cities and towns. Mm-hmm. There are a little over 200 veteran service officers across the state.
Yeah, there are some regional.
So there are some regional
things. Right?
And
yeah.
what we did is said, hey, you know, let's go back to the basics. Let's take a look at what the law says. Let's look at the regulations that apply. Mm. Let's look at any policies that are in place. And then let's look at what is happening on the ground, what's going on in our communities. And so we created a report that's been out for a few months now that lays out this is how the system is supposed to work, and here is how it is working in certain circumstances. Probably the biggest takeaway from that whole report is we have asked a whole lot from those folks that are serving as veteran service officers
yeah.
in our communities. The work just keeps piling up on top of them. So there's room for improvement. It's one of the things we're looking at in the future is can we pull together key stakeholders and look at what areas can be improved, what's easy and what's harder, and take a long-term approach.
Yeah, I know.
Because I think it's a great system.
But I know even like here in Quincy, even there's really only two people, you know, that are running the entire department. I mean, there's this ancillary staff, certainly, you know, that helps. But for the most part, there's the director and the assistant, and this city of over 100,000 people,
yes.
and many of them veterans. Yeah.
You're right, and well, and that highlights another success story with our liaisons. East Bridgewater had a veteran that came to them and said, "Hey, I was drafted to the Vietnam War, but I never got my high school diploma."
Oh.
And they knew about this, but it's one person working in the veterans office. They asked our liaison for some help.
Mm-hmm.
And what we were able to do is identify, yes, there's a law in Massachusetts that says we can get your diploma for you if you were drafted Korean or Vietnam War.
Okay.
So we ended up working between the city of East Bridgewater, the city of Boston, because that's where the individual went to high school.
Oh, okay.
And we were able to get his diploma and did a diploma presentation ceremony.
Oh.
And that was one small area where we could just provide the extra manpower and the extra staff work to get the job done.
Yeah, but extremely meaningful for that person and their family, right?
Yes.
You know,
it really was
a
great event.
High school diploma, yeah, after all those years. How old is that individual now? Must be
right, we're
70.
Talking 60 years after he's finally got his high school diploma.
That's great. Okay. So, small victory, right? But
yes.
huge for him.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's just one example, I guess, of how you can assist.
I think that's a good example of how we work at the local level.
Right.
The way the law is written for our office is we span federal, state, and local.
Oh, really?
So we have responsibilities, liaison at the federal level,
mm-hmm.
and then it's to examine the systems, liaison, and assist mm-hmm. At the state level with state agencies.
Okay. So to effect change, Bob, what would be the procedure for, you know, to identify something and then to effect change in that area? How would you do that?
So one of the things we have the opportunity to look at things that our particular agency may not, right? They're busy doing their day-to-day work. They've got procedures in place. They're focused on handling clients. They don't necessarily have the time to take a step back and look at how is this working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we have a tip line. We have a website where folks can let us know if they think the system's not working quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that information in and we'll start to take a look at a particular situation.
Okay.
And if we have the capacity, it falls within our authority,
yeah.
and it can have a significant difference, then we'll take an approach where we present this to the agency and say, here's an issue we have. We'd love to work with you on this and get the issue resolved. And then we approach it as a working group,
okay,
and get to a resolution. And our goal is, can we find a solution that can be done within the agency itself?
Right.
Can they change a policy? Can they change procedures? Can they make it happen? So then it's an immediate change,
yep,
for the veterans out there. In some cases, it may not be the right solution. We may have to go for legislative support.
Right. Yep.
One of the things we talk to agencies about is, you know, you have your process to submit legislation, usually through the governor over to the state house. As an independent agency, we have the ability to go directly to our legislators and have the same conversation,
mm-hmm,
kind of reinforce the conversation,
mm-hmm,
so they have a broader perspective of what the issue might be.
Yeah. Can you, without naming names, obviously, can you give an example of like something that came in through the TIP route and then you were able to work on that to solve it?
Well, I think one particular, you and I talked about this just prior to the show,
yep,
is the Gabriel House fire.
For certain.
A little,
yep,
over a year ago. And the fire in Fall River, there were 10 fatalities in that fire and a number of people that were injured or had to be displaced for a while,
yes,
until they fixed the building. That was kind of a tip that came through our liaison with the VA. So we got word that the Secretary of VA, Secretary Collins, at the federal level, had seen the report and was concerned that there were some veterans that were, four of those 10 fatalities were veterans.
Yeah.
One of our responsibilities is to investigate fatalities that are veterans that are receiving care from the Commonwealth. In this particular case, it was a privately run facility,
mm-hmm,
so they were not in the care of the Commonwealth. We did our due diligence to check that out, right? The VA was interested, so we need to be able to help them answer the question. The other part was 40% of the fatalities were veterans.
Yes.
We know that elder veterans only make up 10% of the state's population. So that's a fourfold increase in for veterans in that fatality group. So we took a look. There was no real connection to veterans programs, benefits, or services for our authority to come into play. But we did work with the local authorities and with Aging and Independence to offer our support,
okay,
if there's anything we could do.
Sure.
And then we also looked at those veterans that were in the group of survivors. And so our liaison, in this case, Truck, who was on the show previously with,
yes,
me,
yeah,
that's her region as well. And she was there on site to assist that veteran service officer with talking to the families,
oh,
talking to the those that were injured. You know, part of that tragedy was just being able to have a human-to-human connection, right? To relieve some of those fears, help calm folks down and know that we are finding ways to support them to make sure that they'll be taken care,
sure,
of.
Sure, yeah. I would imagine, too, a lot of the first responders to that tragedy were also veterans and impacted by that as well.
So I believe there were, you,
yeah,
know, we didn't get into that piece of it, but
right,
I know we had conversations with the mayor and the fire department and some of the investigators down there.
Yeah, probably something you didn't envision when you first created the office, right, that that'd be something you'd be responding,
right,
to. Yeah.
But it's one of the things that we stay flexible about because I think most people saw the fire wouldn't necessarily think to look at, were veterans involved with,
right,
this,
and, yeah,
was that tied to any sort of veteran support? That's what makes us unique.
Mm.
We have the ability to do that,
yeah,
and so we took that look at the same time we were getting an inquiry from the feds.
Yeah, why is this important to you, Bob? And you have a passion about this. It's. I mean, obviously you're a veteran yourself, so you know there's that. But there's more. There's more to it as well.
Yeah. So I am a veteran myself. I served 27 years in the Army and 12 years active Army, 12 years active Reserve, so full-time for 27 years. And one of the things in the Army we talk about is mission first, people always. And when I separated from the military and came to this area, I ended up getting involved in the nonprofit sector. And it happened to be with veterans and military members. And at that point it became, oh, it's the mission are the veterans and the military members. So it's first and always veterans and military members became my motto. So working in the nonprofit sector, I took a break, went back to school to kind of get another degree. My degree background is hard science, and then I wanted to get something that was more related to the work that I was doing in a nonprofit. So
okay.
I got a degree in public administration.
Okay.
Just to be able to round myself out
sure.
a little bit better. And during the finishing up of that program is when this opportunity, the Office of the Veteran Advocate, they were advertising the position, so I applied. It seemed to be a great fit for me because I'm always looking at how can we help each other out.
Hmm. And has it been what you thought it would be? Has it been rewarding for you?
It has been.
Yeah.
You know, there are wins every day, even
yeah.
little wins. There are, you know, bigger challenges out there. There are, but we always keep working together. I have to say this. The folks that I've been able to pull on my team are all passionate about supporting veterans. Most of them are veterans themselves,
sure.
not all of them. But everybody is focused on what we do and trying to make a difference and fixing something when we see that it's wrong.
Simple, but difficult
right.
at the same time, right?
Right?
Yeah. For veterans or their families, Bob, that are watching or listening and have questions, concerns, issues, can you help them?
Here's what we tell folks. Number one, we're designed as a government-to-government agency.
Okay.
Our job is to look to make sure we're improving services across the agency and that there's accountability across
okay.
those agencies. So what I will tell veterans and family members is we're not a service provider.
Okay.
We're a service corrector or service facilitator. So in most cases, I will tell veterans, if you have a question or an issue for yourself, you know, I would like to look into this. Am I eligible for that? You go to your municipal veteran service officer. That's
okay.
their job. If you see something that isn't working quite right for all your veteran friends, then it's probably a systemic issue. That's
okay.
what you bring to us. You find out, I don't think the system is working quite right. That's when you pick up the phone and call us, go to our website, drop us a note, or send us an email.
Okay. And it might not be that VSO's fault, if you will, right? They're just following policy.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. And sometimes, yeah, that's the thing. The policy is in place and maybe it's no longer valid.
Right.
Maybe we need to take another look at it.
Yeah. It needs to be updated. So it needs to be changed. It needs to be created or eliminated, right?
Yes.
Depending on the circumstances. We've been putting up your website,
great.
Your phone number, the QR code as well. I know you're out on social media as well for a presence there. I know that you've had job fairs in the past, so I'm curious about the opportunities to help veterans find employment or change employment or improve their employment.
So what we're doing on the employment front, and we recently went through a strategic planning process, it's an area we're going to look at in the future, is we want to take a look at, again, the systemic side of things. There's two big issues we're looking at right now. One is the declining population of veterans in Massachusetts.
Hmm.
We currently sit around 250,000 veterans in Massachusetts. That number, according to the VA's model, is falling 8,000 veterans each year.
Is that right?
Which tells me a lot of younger veterans are not coming to Massachusetts. And one of the conversations that we're trying to have with the executive agencies and the leadership in the state is, let's find a way to attract more service members that are transitioning out of service to come to Massachusetts and fill all of these critical jobs
yep.
that we have. And we have a lot of openings
yep.
here. And we have a lot of high-tech, medical
sure.
A lot of
education.
Positions here that
yep.
are quality jobs. So we want to be able to draw more transitioning service members to the state. How do we do that? There's a lot of different ways.
Mm.
And then the second part is, let's look at state government, state and local government itself. So the state currently tracks a goal of 7% veterans working in state government. There's a website out there that tracks that.
Hmm.
And we are currently somewhere around 3%
to
meet the goal. But again, if you look at what's the veteran population in Massachusetts, it's about 3.5% of the population. So we want to have those conversations. Is 7% the right goal?
Right.
Should we align that better with the population
the reality,
of veterans?
Yeah.
What's a successful number? What's the right number? But we certainly should attract more veterans to state and local jobs.
Sure. We'll have to have you back for an update on that.
I always love to come back.
Great to talk to you. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you, Joe.
You're very welcome.